Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of
mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Taylor Quimby in for Virginia Prescott. If asked to list the most influential scientists of the modern age, you might say Einstein, Watson and Crick, or Charles Darwin. And yes, name recognition and Nobel Prizes are excellent methods for measuring success in the sciences. But there is another, more modest exercise to count the number of times a scientific paper has been cited by other scientific papers. Do this, and you'll find the unusual honor of most cited scientist goes to a relatively unknown biologist, Oliver Lowry. But why? Richard Van Noorden is a reporter for Nature. He and his colleagues recently spent some time analyzing the 100 most cited scientific papers of all time, and he joins us now to share what he learned in the process. Richard, welcome to the program.
Hi, Taylor. Great to be here.
So what is Oliver Lowry's paper about, and how often has it been cited in other works?
Lowry's paper was published in 1951, and it's just a way of quantifying how much protein there is in a solution by reacting it with another reagent. Sounds very esoteric, but in fact it's got more than 300,000 citations from other science papers since it was published. That puts it way ahead of any other paper in our survey. It's actually a very well-known paper among biochemists, but of course completely obscure to anyone outside of that field.
Well, and maybe because, not to take down its importance, but it sounds relatively dull to those of us who are maybe used to hearing things about, you know, E equals MC squared or string theory, something that's a little more sexy for the public.
Right. It turns out that many of the papers in this top 100 are these what you might call boring biochemical lab techniques. The next few papers on the list are also about measuring proteins and solutions. And that's because in order to find out the more exciting findings, you rely on these workhorse experimental methods. We have to go down to number four before we get to something that people may have heard of, Fred Sanger's first technique for sequencing DNA. Now out of date, but that won him a Nobel Prize, and that is quite well known, but also a biochemical technique. And further down this list, we see software programs. We see theoretical physics equations in something called density functional theory. These are all used by researchers to go on to make the breakthrough findings that we've all heard of, and that's why they get so many citations. And I think that this list is revealing that what is important in science is not just the breakthrough, the secrets of the universe, as it were, but also the techniques and the methods.
So how are these scientific citations quantified? I mean, we must be talking about, I would think, tens of thousands of papers every year being published by any number of magazines and journals. Is there an organization that's specifically dedicated to compiling all of them so that you are able to look at it and have a big takeaway?
Well, this year alone, there were way more than 2 million papers published, and there's no database that captures all of these papers. There are just well-known databases that capture a subset of them, and we picked the Web of Science, which is an enormous, all-encompassing database. It's published by Thomson Reuters, the information firm. Their database has 58 million papers from 1900 onwards. So the top 100 that we're talking about, well, if you imagine taking the first page of each paper and stacking it, you would get to about the height of Mount Kilimanjaro, and the top 100 most cited would be just a centimetre at that peak. So it's a very, very select bunch.
So you mentioned process. What are some of the other general trends that you see as you're scanning through this list of the top 100 most cited papers of all time?
I think that the top 100 list also shows you that scientists in different fields have different citation practices. Biochemists tend to cite each other a lot more, whereas mathematicians don't feature in this list simply because they just don't cite each other's work as much. So it's a slightly selective view that depends on the vagaries of citation practice.
Well, that's interesting that you would say that because, you know, we've talked on this program about how papers, are often retracted, or not often, but sometimes retracted. And sometimes after they're retracted, they continue to be cited in future work. So I was wondering whether or not you got a sense of whether the number of citations is always a good measure of the quality of research.
Right. This is one of those cases where if a paper is highly cited, it is probably influential. That's not always the case. So Andrew Wakefield's paper on a link between MMR and autism in The Lancet, now discredited and retracted, has thousands of citations, but of course it's completely terrible science. So as a general rule of thumb, being highly cited compared to your field is a good measure of being influential or at least fashionable, but it's not a fail-safe measure. And on the other hand, a really influential piece of work, like Einstein's theory of special relativity, is nowhere near the top 100 list. It's so influential that it's become incorporated into textbooks and people don't feel the need to cite it anymore. But these are the exceptions, I think. The general rule is that if you're in the top of this list, it is an influential paper for good reasons.
Do people in the science community take pride in having their work cited? I mean, is that something that researchers strive for while they're doing work?
Scientists love to be cited, partly because, to be honest, showing that you have a lot of citations is a quantitative measure that shows you're doing influential work. So it's a figure you can present to your managers and your grant funders when you want to get money for your next piece of research. So scientists do track their citations quite heavily, and there's a whole industry of measuring how heavily you are cited. There's a number called the H-index, which says if my H-index is 100, I have 100 papers with at least 100 citations. And scientists proudly display this on their CVs. Some people think this has gone a bit too far, depending too heavily on these numbers as a way of measuring performance. But it's a reasonable guide, I think. And of course, what it does pick up, as we've seen in this top 100 list, is that even unglamorous research can actually be important and influential. So in a way, it shows that even if you work on software or lab techniques that will never reach the attention of the public, your work is still, in fact, very influential.
So given that's the case, do you think there's any possibility that Oliver Lowry or some of these other folks at the top of the list could someday maybe hope to posthumously or otherwise see a Nobel Prize?
Well, as I say, Sanger won the Nobel for his methods for DNA, but the Nobel Prize is really generally given for discoveries. It's not usually given for these techniques, which you might think is a pity. Lowry actually himself said back in 1977, he died in 1996, but in 1977, he said, well, I know this is not a great paper, but I secretly get a kick out of the response. And so I think that being heavily cited is kind of a reward in itself for many scientists.
Richard Van Noorden is a reporter for Nature. He and his colleagues recently spent some time analyzing the 100 most cited scientific papers of all time, and you can read more about his work at wordofmouthradio.org. Richard Van Noorden, thank you so much for being with me today.
Thank you.
Word of Mouth continues with a look at a growing crisis in the sciences, what a surplus of postdoc researchers might mean for aspiring scientists, after the break.